Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 25th, 2020. Aid agencies pull out as intercommunal fighting continues in the Greater Pibor administrative area.
MSF receives three patients with gunshot wounds in our primary healthcare center in Pibor. The fighting is now approaching Pibor town.
And donors meet in Germany to discuss how to support Sudan's economy.
It's really the culmination. It's the eighth meeting of the Friends of Sudan. And it's the moment where the pledges of support will be finally made public.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The medical charity Doctors Without Borders say intercommunal fighting in the eastern part of South Sudan has displaced thousands of people into the bushes, forcing aid agencies to suspend operations in the Pibor administrative area. The International Committee for the Red Cross says they are not able to evacuate and treat the wounded. An official with the medical charity Doctors Without Borders says the agency has suspended operations because most of its staff fled with their families into the bushes. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
The Medicine Sans Frontiers, or MSF, and the International Committee of the Red Cross say the escalating intercommunal violence in the eastern part of South Sudan, in and around Pibor, has displaced thousands, including their staff. Officials say they worry that some people who are sick or injured and do not have access to medical attention will die. Ibrahim Mohamed, the MSF Belgium head of mission in South Sudan, says thousands of people from the Gumruk and Manyabol areas of Pibor have fled into the bush as fighting approaches Pibor town, some 35 kilometers away.
MSF receives three patients with gunshot wounds in our primary healthcare center in Pibor. The fighting is now approaching Pibor town. In the east, with almost all residents choosing to seek refuge in the surrounding bushes, including MSF staff. Our staff fled with their families, fearing for their lives and those of their loved ones.
Mohamed says MSF closed down its health facilities in the area and has suspended operations in Pibor because most of its staff and their family members fled to surrounding bushes.
The new rise in the intercommunal clashes has led MSF to suspend our medical activities in Pibor after most of our staff sought safety in the remote bush areas. If the clashes persist, we can expect more wounded. We will soon arrive at the highest of the malaria season. And without proper shelter, people will further be exposed to life-threatening diseases.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says it is unable to evacuate those wounded because most of the medical staff have been put on COVID-19 restriction measures. Walde Gabriel Sajron, the ICRC head of sub-delegation in Bor, says the ICRC cannot evacuate everyone who sustained gunshot wounds because it is running short on capacity.
Due to COVID-19, our capacities have decreased a lot. First of all, hospital capacities in terms of bed, because of the COVID-19, you have to put in place social distancing, which means that our bed capacities have decreased. But more worrying is that we have not been able to reinforce our teams in those health facilities. Therefore, we don't have full capacity to take care of the wounded people. So we cannot bring them in. That's why, for the time being, we are not in a position to do medical evacuation for these wounded people.
Since the intercommunal violence started in the Greater Jongole, Sajeron says the ICRC has evacuated more than 300 injured people for treatment in its three facilities across the country. He says he worries many people could die if the violence continues without any medical intervention.
So with us, for us, it would be very important, and that's what we are trying to do, to access those communities and see also how we can support them. But our access, of course, is conditioned by the security situation on the ground. And for the time being, that is still not possible.
Sajeron told South Sudan in Focus by phone, it is very difficult for the humanitarian organizations to know the exact number of people displaced and cannot provide them with the services unless the violence stops. In a statement last week, the ICRC said during April and May, thousands of armed youth spent weeks mobilizing, preparing, and trekking across Jonglei, which is about twice the size of Switzerland. By the time they reached communities in and around Pibor, the ICRC said rumors of imminent attacks had emptied towns and villages, leaving the elderly, women, and children to bear the brunt of the attacks. This week, President Salva Kiir formed a committee headed by Vice President James Wani Iga to find a way to make peace between the warring communities of Greater Jonglei within 21 days. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Some residents of the Sudanese capital Khartoum are complaining about what they call frequent power cuts that are disrupting their work. For the last few days, power blackouts have lasted up to 7 hours in the capital Khartoum. Some residents say the power cuts are also affecting people with underlying health problems, especially the elderly. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Khartoum resident Isra Osman does some part-time online translation work to earn a living during the COVID-19 lockdown. Osman says the power outages make it difficult to complete and submit her work to clients in one of the Gulf countries.
My laptop can only survive for 1 hour long, so when power cut happens in the daytime, I might work for only 1 to 1.5 hours. The thing that has really affected the overall work structure.
Mohiddin Atahir, another Khartoum resident, owns a grocery store in the Kalakala neighborhood. Speaking in Arabic, Atahir says, due to the intermittent electricity, he decided to give up selling priceable items like yogurt, milk, and meat, saying they cannot stay in hot environment for long.
It has really affected our business, especially during the night. The purchasing power has totally reduced, and some of our customers are not able to move at night.
One Omdurman resident who prefers to be identified only as Omiyasir says the power outages are frustrating to many Sudanese families. Speaking in Arabic, Omiyasir says her sick mother, who was diagnosed with asthma, has been suffering for the past 3 days in the excessive heat and has shortness of breath.
She has been suffering and we are rotating after the other to help her. We are unable to go to the hospital as most of the hospitals are experiencing shortages of medical staff during this pandemic, and they don't even have oxygen. We are afraid to take her to the hospital because she can easily be suspected of having corona.
Temperatures in Khartoum can go as high as 43 degrees and as low as 29 at night. Some Khartoum residents say it is difficult to survive without dependable electricity. Omar Al-Jali works as a cyber expert in Omdurman. Al-Jali says he has been unable to earn money for the last few days because there is no power during the daytime in his area.
Our work is usually very segmented in a way, where we don't get to work long hours as we have to keep our things charged. And once the electricity comes back, then we end up working late nights, and it kind of affects our daily routines and our sleep schedules and all this.
Speaking during a press conference earlier this week in Khartoum, the Sudanese Minister for Energy and Mining, Adil Ali Ibrahim, said authorities are having technical problems with the main power station. Ibrahim told citizens, quote, "We don't have many choices to avoid power cuts, but we are trying our level best through our work plan. So we are aware that the coming days will be difficult. Many neighborhoods will be experiencing this," end quote. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The Sudan Partnership Conference kicked off today in Germany. The conference brings together around 50 donors and international organizations to support Sudan's transition and economy. Majdi Amin, a senior advisor at Sudan's Ministry of Finance, says his government hopes to get financial support to make direct cash transfer to citizens who are affected by the COVID-19 related lockdowns. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
It is really great to see that so many nations and organizations have followed our invitation in these trying times. And a special welcome and a big thank you goes to my friends and co-host, Prime Minister Hamdok, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, and to Josep Borrell, the High Representative and Vice President of the European Union. Your attendance underlines the importance that we all attach to a peaceful, prosperous, and democratic Sudan. And so does the financial assistance that we will be offering to Sudan and its people to date.
That's Germany Foreign Affairs Minister Heiko Maas during his opening remarks at the video conference hosted by Germany, the United Nations, and Sudan. During the conference, the United States, the European Union, and several other countries pledged hundreds of millions of dollars in support of Sudan's transition and economy. The conference has brought together a group called the Friends of Sudan, comprised of the United States, Germany, France, Britain, Ethiopia, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt. Mehdi Amin, a senior advisor at Sudan's Minister of Finance, says regional and international financial institutions, including the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the African Development Bank are also attending the conference to pledge their support.
It's really the culmination. It's the eighth meeting of the Friends of Sudan, and it's the moment where the pledges of support will be finally made public. So during the conference, we expect to hear from the government. We will be discussing the progress that we've made in terms of the political partnership, the support to peace building, democratic governance, and a program of economic reform.
Amin says the primary purpose of the meeting is to help prop up Sudan's faltering economy.
To support the economic reforms and mitigate their impact on the population, international partners will focus their pledges on the Sudan Family Support Program, which is a large direct cash transfer program that should eventually cover about 80% of the Sudanese population. The Family Support Program is particularly important because any reforms will have, in the short run, an impact on people.
Amin says his government also hopes to begin long-term economic programs that will reduce the country's skyrocketing inflation rate, which stands at 114%. Many Sudanese cannot afford basic necessities like food.
By going to this donor conference, we hope to gain support in the form of, you know, grants from the international community that would reduce the amount of all of these reforms, all of the costs of these reforms that would have to be paid for out of the budget. So hopefully through this process, we will emerge with a much smaller deficit than we would otherwise have. And that would then make the financing costs and the potential inflation, the other impacts on the Sudanese, much less.
Sudanese political analyst Abdul Munaim Himmad says, for decades during the era of ousted Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, Sudan was cut off from the international community. He says getting donors to come together today is a huge achievement for the transitional government.
Sudan gradually gains the confidence of the international community. It is a unique opportunity to exploit Sudanese materials and human resources. Sudan should benefit from this international gathering and encourage people to invest in Sudan by providing accurate plans and flexible investment law.
Himmad is urging the Friends of Sudan to support the government of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok in order to complete Sudan's transition to democracy.
Sudan's partners with this title should play effective roles by helping the transitional government to achieve the goals of democratic transition and economic reforms.
The U.S.-based organization, The Century, which says its aim is to rid governments of corruption, released a statement yesterday urging conference attendees to provide financial support to Sudan. The Century says a meaningful infusion of donor support would help safeguard Sudan's transition to democracy and civilian rule from all the many threats risking to derail it. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how are teachers faring on with their lives in South Sudan during the COVID-19 related lockdown? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why do you think more young people are turning away from farming?
You know, for you to farm, to be a farmer, you have to wait. I'm waiting until, you know, these guys, they don't want to wait. They want the money now. They don't want you to maybe you plant your corn or maize or yam, and you have to wait till maybe probably like how many months before it germinates and before you can even harvest.
Maybe because they feel or they view farming to be an old occupation or vocation that I'm mostly for the villagers. But then I feel farming is one that I know you can generate money from.
In most cases, young people in Africa think white collar jobs are the most earning. But in the real sense, it's the reverse.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Teachers at private schools in South Sudan say life is tough for them following the closure of schools to prevent the spread of the coronavirus in the country. The teachers say employers stopped paying them. The Director General at the Ministry of Education says education officials in South Sudan are conducting studies to determine how and when to reopen schools. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
For most private school teachers, closing down school means closing down their main source of income. Okello Kenneth worked as headmaster at Darling Wisdom Academy in Juba before the government closed schools in March. He says private schools like his depended solely on school fees paid by parents. Now, Kenneth says he has no income to support his family.
The situation really is not good because teachers are just at home. I personally, I am at home, and what I was receiving, I'm no longer receiving. In the institution here, I was heading as being the teacher, and my pay was 30,000. It has taken so far now from April up to now, there is no longer any salary going on because of that.
Juba private primary school teacher John Remigio says he was recently diagnosed with malaria but could not afford to pay his medical bills on top of other family needs because he has not been paid since schools were closed.
I rely much on just my salary. I did not have any other work. It's become so hard. Since the children are not coming to school, there's no more salary that we do get. The issue of feeding, you know, Juba is so expensive. Everything relies on money.
Remigio says he is the only breadwinner in a family of seven. Yaroda, a nursery school teacher at Blaise Shepherd Nursery and Primary School in Juba, says since schools were closed in March, she has become dependent on others.
My life is now becoming hard. Since I was a student, I used to ask from uncles, brothers. So by then, when I got that job of being a teacher, so I was free just to buy myself and other things we need. So at this time, it is now very hard for me. It is taking me back to my parents.
Before the government ordered schools to close, Rhoda earned 20,000 South Sudanese pounds, equivalent to $61 a month. Rhoda says she used to give her mother some money and the rest she would use to cover her personal expenses. But that all changed in March. That month, the government COVID-19 high-level task force ordered the closure of schools, churches, markets, bars, and other public gathering places. In May, bars, public transportation, and markets were allowed to reopen, but schools and churches remained closed. Some school administrators complain the decision is unfair. Isaac Woja is a member of the board of directors at Juba Academy, a private secondary school.
We are surprised that other economic activities are ongoing. The markets are fully back. Public transport is back. The bars and the restaurants are back. And we are asking, why are the schools not allowed to resume? Because it's affecting the learning of our children, and it's also affecting the jobs of those who are employed by these schools.
Woja says schools are better positioned to observe COVID-19 preventive measures compared to bars. Nelson Odur, Director General for Basic and General Education at South Sudan's National Ministry of Education, says there are no plans to reopen primary and secondary schools anytime soon, but the ministry is working on a justification to reopen finalist classes.
The Minister of General Education is planning a reopening of candidate classes, but this reopening has to be approved by the higher level task force according to the situation of the COVID. Because us in the ministry, we don't know the situation of the COVID, so it is the higher level task that has the instruments of determining whether schools can safe to open.
Odur says some schools in Juba opened illegally last week, but the ministry quickly shut them down. He says, rather than worry about income, school teachers and administrators should take COVID-19 seriously. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
A local advocacy group in Western Equatorial State is using comedy to educate South Sudanese about COVID-19. The group that calls itself Community Organization for Peace and Development uses radio and social media to disseminate information about the coronavirus. For VOA News, Siba Martin Morangi reports from Juba.
In a clip from a radio piece, comedian Alex Danibikoyo says in Arabic, some people do not respect the rules of social distancing, while the few men who adhere to social distancing sleep in a separate beds from their wives. Speaking by phone from Yambio in Western Equatorial State, Danibikoyo says his group aims to entertain the community while providing education about the facts on COVID-19. Sylvester Ruati, Executive Director of Community Organization for Peace and Development in Yambio, says his group uses comedy to educate the public about COVID-19 because the group believes young people learn more while being entertained.
I brought some of the young people just to keep them busy, because I came to learn that leaving young people without to initiating a program for them, it makes them to go to some of the activities which is not good. Some of them will go for criminal activities, stealing and all those things. And then I thought wise that I should bring them on board to initiate a program for them that will keep them forward.
Ruati says aside from educating the public about COVID-19, his group uses drama to provide messages on radio and in social media about empowering the community to take the lead in activities that will improve their lives.
The major focus, it's not all about the comedy alone. We are now measuring in some of the activities like peace building, capacity building, youth engagement, youth empowerment, and women empowerment. And when we go to the issue of COVID-19, through video clips and voice clips we record, then we distribute it to different media platforms.
Eric Abjohn, who says he has learned a lot about the pandemic by listening to the group's messages. He says the group's comedy skits also keep him entertained during the lockdown.
I'm now pursuing for my degree in Kampala University in Juba. I want to talk about how comedy has changed my life. You know, we came from nowhere, but now doing this comedy, at least I get fame, people get to know me and try to entertain.
The group was formed 3 years ago and is being supported by the Catholic Diocese of Tombra Yambio. Executive Director Rati says the group's aim is to help young people become self-reliant in life. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Murangi in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with Meta Loro singing about Junub Sudan.
Nature talent music. I'm Meta Loro Moses. It's the record behind this.
Keep
sharing
on the beat.
And in Kore, Matabal Fizunub Sudan. Anina iyal bikore, matabal fizunuk sudan. Anina bikore daban ma fizo biasumanina. Anina bikore daban ma fizo biasumanina. Zamakan sakila debada fibele na muatani bikore bikore daban kali. Sika ma file kam, ohaya bikam bigasaf. Ulwa zaile sab de sibu yal de biga bikore gali abu to mode kan kanyan hasa de biga mu feliz medere sa tanina wakil biga mapi loze na gore li abu abu de bi fekir sikata sudani waina de sekino sila u ya jamara buna saidu anina ye afi anina yo Dilenina salami pelena rabuna saidwani na ye afiani na yo we dilenina salami anina iyal bikore matabal fizunuk sudan anina iyal bikore matabal fizunuk sudan anina bikore daban ma fizu gasmanina Anina bikore daban ma fizo biasumanina Rabuna kani rasulu diktora sanzaka sifu ayanta bele tanina de Diktro zali gogali dege bili ya yao kuzuru domta bele tanina de Jolal kani nduzi rato tamam Pisa sudan pisa lifu sita le sita besu wan Veti suta yonze jol mozunu Tanina alkanpana tamam pisa numpipiris Watama sama ya bana zunu Bimpele de masikwe nina bamulu sunu ya jama Anina iyal bikore matabal fizunub sudan
We have been listening to Meta Loro Moses with his song Junub Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands, practice social distance, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Bele de masi win ya kwana zunu binina bamulu sunu ya zama sakila maluma nina nina bi